Now, I want to focus on that first incident that I mentioned because I want to make sure I've got this right because I'm sitting at the scores table and only seeing this kind of sort of out the corner of my eye. There's a shot that goes up, and I believe Amy and Jen were going for the same rebound, or Amy had gotten the rebound, and next thing I know, Jen's hunched over on the baseline and holding her hand over her mouth. Amy's looking at her elbow. Do you even know to this day what exactly happened and what the deal was with that situation?
You know, in the moment, I had no idea what was going on. I thought Jen just got hit in the mouth and was on the ground, and then I saw Amy was bleeding. And they both went after the same offensive rebound, which is something that I harp on them about, is being aggressive and getting on the O boards. After watching the tape and speaking to them about what happened, Jen basically bit Amy in the arm and lost her tooth, and Amy had a really deep gash on her arm. So Jen actually just got everything fixed and taken care of with her tooth yesterday. And Amy is all healed up. But, you know, Amy with, you know, the next couple days couldn't even move her arm because that gash was so deep. But she hit the two game-winning free throws about 30 seconds later. So that's essentially what happened. They just ran into each other. It's kind of a Three Stooges moment. But it's something that we're going to remember, especially for Jen's career.
So basically, Jen went all Hannibal Lecter on Amy on accident, and Amy just was wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah, exactly. They were just both being aggressive.
Oh, man. I love it, because looking back at it now, it's so funny. But I can recall, Jen's on the baseline, I think she's even at the bench, and she's like borderline ready to bawl out in tears over it. And I'm just, it's mean to kind of laugh at it, but at the end, you have to be able to kind of laugh at yourself, right?
Yeah, we laugh about it nearly every day because now she has to wear a mouth guard. And she is actually, for being a freshman, also one that communicates a lot on the court. And, you know, now that she's wearing the mouth guard, I notice even more how much she communicates because you can't understand one thing she's saying. but, you know, she has never, from that day, stopped being aggressive. You know, the next game we played at, I think it was ACP, and she was still attacking the boards, and she was missing half her tooth at that point. So, I mean, that says a lot about her. Jen just loves basketball.
And it's at a point where now she looks like she's a boxer or an MMA fighter now when she's on the court, which I think is quite hilarious.
Yeah, exactly.
Allison Coleman, Sage women's basketball head coach, joining us here on Katie's Corner, Sporty 1240, NBC Sports Radio, also streaming live online, sporty1240.com. So this is the stuff you miss when you don't go to D3 basketball games. And I'm not going to say any more because, like I said, I've been warned to stay professional in this interview. Lucy Tremblay, your assistant coach, joined on midseason. You know, brings a Section 2 background with her, a very nice playing career. What has she really been able to do over the course of the last month, especially with all the games that have been going on in the last 2, 3, 4 weeks? What has she been able to bring to the table to help kind of maybe balance everything between you and the team and everything in large?
Well, you know, being an assistant coach is probably, I think, the toughest thing to do because you're trying to manage the head coach's emotions as well as the kids, and usually they're fairly different emotions. So, I mean, she's just been a calming presence for myself, especially in the office when I have to, you know, talk X's and O's or just decompress. But, you know, with the kids also, she's that calming voice for them. And, you know, I can be that crazy head coach, and if I need to yell, I need to yell. But then she does a really, really good job of pulling individual kids or groups of kids aside and, you know, just being that encouragement that they need. You know, I spent 4 years as, you know, an assistant at Eastern, and it was tough. It's very draining being an assistant coach. I think, you know, sometimes harder than any other position. But, you know, she just does a great job. And, I mean, like you said, she had a great playing experience, too, and she's not too far removed from that. So I think she's understanding where these kids are coming from because she's only, I think, 2 years removed from playing in college. And being in, you know, since we are, again, that senior-laden team, you know, she fully understands, you know, the things that they're going through.
Now, I have a feeling saying when Lucy last played kind of aged you, but it aged me at the same time. So let me get this straight. She's only, like, 23. And I'm 27, sitting there like, you know, doing the, oh, man. All right, sorry. I just had a very bad timing there. The senior class, I want to bring them up. I mentioned earlier, 5 graduating seniors, plus Sarah Taroni, the junior, graduating early because She's way too smart to be at a D3 school. this core that you've had with Bowman, Vanacore, McLean, Tyrone Jefferson, and Carly Hurt, I mean, that's a big chunk of the team. But at the same time, you got to appreciate what you have now while you have it. Obviously, a lot of big contributors in that list of players right there.
Oh, huge. Obviously, Meg Bowman's Meg Bowman. You know, she's playing 40 minutes a game, and, on both ends of the floor, we, expect big things from her, and we feed off her, her emotion, the way she plays. So those are going to be big shoes to fill. I have been very, very happy with how Leah McLean's been playing, especially the second semester. She's, earned some more time, and, she ended up starting a couple games in the past couple weeks. And like I said, seniors just do amazing things when it comes to playoff time and when you need them the most. Sarah Tironi is the toughest player I've ever seen on the court, especially being an undersized post. And then Amy Jefferson, what she provides on the interior defensively. And all of a sudden she started being a little more aggressive on the offensive end, which I can't say I hate. all those things, it's definitely gotten us to where we are and hopefully is going to propel us, the next one game, hopefully two, in the Skyline Conference.
You could say two. That's fine. You can say two, because that
coaches
means,
get all superstitious.
Well, true. I was the same way earlier with who was it? Oh, with the guy who told me to keep it professional. I was the same way with him earlier. It's okay. Wanted to rewind real quick though to the whole scenario that led up to that final week of the season. It was basically this. I made a mistake early in the week by announcing that you guys had already clinched the two by beating a certain team. I don't even remember what game it was. I want to say it was the Mount St. Mary game. Yes, last Tuesday.
Yeah, senior night, yeah.
I was the idiot who just made an assumption and said you clinched the two seed. But the scenario set up like this. Either Mount St. Vincent had to lose to Yeshiva or you had to beat Farmingdale to clinch the two. Otherwise, Mount St. Vincent got the two. So, in other words, I jinxed you. So, I'll take the blame for what's happened.
But, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Somebody's got to do it. It might as well be me because never mind. But you go to Farmingdale, and I know we had a conversation that, things were, this was obviously a huge game for you because you wanted to have that home game against Mount St. Vincent. Talk about what the strategy was going into that Farmingdale game and what ended up happening there.
Yeah, I actually switched up the starting lineup a little bit. I put Leah in with Meg. We pressure 94 feet, so I wanted to give Meg a break because I knew that she was going to, barring any foul trouble, play 40 minutes. So, and like I said, Leah's just been playing really, really well. So I put Leah in there and with Meg and Jen and Tironi and Amy. And I think it would have worked, but we definitely shot ourselves in the foot a couple times, a couple 31 times. That's something that we need to clean up. But I think the game plan was there. And then, Knockwood was fantastic off the bench in her 15 minutes. She was our leading scorer, in just 15 minutes of basketball. So the plan worked, but for what we had to do against them, everything on the scouting report, that the coaching staff put in there, we were prepared and they were prepared, but we kind of, I think, got a little out of our own games and into our own heads, from the tip. So that hurt us.
Now I want to throw in a hypothetical scenario because, it's a scenario that happened at the end of the Siena men's game Saturday night that I defended actually the coach's decision. I want to see where you stand on this. So here it is. The Siena men were down 3 with 48.2 seconds left. They chose, instead of playing the free throw game, because the shot clock was still on, they chose to try and play straight up D and either A, force the shot clock violation, or B, a bad shot, and then get the ball back down 3 with 12, 13 seconds left. Plus, they still had, I believe, 2 timeouts left at the time. Now, the story ends up being Manhattan hits an open 3 with 5 left in the shot clock and game was over, but if you're in that scenario, 48 seconds, down 3 with 2 timeouts, shot clock still running, what would you personally do? Do you prefer playing a free throw game at that point? Or are you the type of coach that likes to, that has the confidence in your team to let them play out the defense and see if they can force the bad shot or the shot clock violation.
You know, it's interesting you ask that because that kind of happened on Saturday. But, I mean, if it's one possession and, you know, we just need one stop and then we get the ball back and then the fate, you know, our own fate's in our own hands, then, you know, I'd rather do that. Play straight up defense and then we get the ball back. Cause I, you know, as much as I preach defense and rebounding, I fully have confidence that my team would get that one stop. And then, you know, we call a timeout and set up a play. And then, you know, obviously if you don't score on that first offensive possession, then you got to play the foul game cause you know, you're down to under 20 seconds. But, you know, on Saturday, we weren't scoring. And I think we made a final run and we ended up down six. With about 2.5 to go, and Farmingdale traditionally is a horrible free throw shooting team. So I started the foul game, and unfortunately, they hit their free throws on Saturday. So that kind of backfired a little bit. But and it also could have been, you know, obviously their defense picks up too, because you know we're down 15, 16, and then all of a sudden, a minute and a half later, we're only down six. So, but yeah, as far as that Siena situation, I probably would have done the same thing and trusted my team to get that one defensive stop.
See, I don't just make stuff up, people. Coaches support what I was saying yesterday. See, look at that. Real quick to wrap things up, obviously, huge game this Thursday night, going down to Mount St. Vincent, playing the semifinals of the Skyline Conference Tournament. Team you split the season series with, lost down there earlier in the season, and then won a home game against them roughly a month or so ago. Talk about this team, seeing them a third time, and maybe what things could be done differently to give yourself a different result from the first time you guys went down there.
Yeah, I mean, Mount St. Vincent, they're, you know, led by Kelly Frazier, which I know you know and you've talked about her quite a bit. You know, she's averaging like 17 and 12 per game. But the thing about them, they rely so much on their jump shots. So we need to get, you know, not let them get their feet set. And I've been watching film until my eyes are popping out on them. And, you know, we just need to get up into them. And the big thing with them, they want to run. And we also want to run. But I think when we try to run with other teams, things get a little hectic. So we just need to play our own game. And the big scene this week is focusing on us. I fully believe that we have the best team in the Skyline Conference. And we just need to play our own game and focus on what we need to do. You know, we'll do a little scouting report on them, obviously, to prepare ourselves. But I have the faith that my team and, you know, these five, six seniors are going to come out and play the way they need to play to get this W, even though it's on the road and it's going to be, you know, the crowd's going to be crazy. But, you know, I preach to them, control the controllables. And we can't control the refs. We can't control the crowd. We can control what happens, you know, in that 94 feet of hardwood.
Coach, I appreciate the time, especially when we're able to laugh at player injuries a little bit. Thank you very much again for coming on, as always. And good luck to you Thursday night, and I know we'll be talking soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brian.